Hi there, I'm Stefan T. Lawood, and welcome back to Advanced STL Part 6. In Part 5, in the comments, which you can read, somebody gave me a suggestion, Carrick SB, about a pretty printer for STL containers, and this was so interesting that I took some time to write my own solution, and I'd like to present to you how I did this. It uses a bit of template machinery, actually a fair amount, and handles things a little differently than his original solution. So if you go to the comments, you can see his original presentation of the problem. Basically, if you have something like a vector, a vector of arbitrary elements, you might want to print it out as 1, 2, 3. But what if you have a vector of strings? You would want to print the elements there. Or what if they're nested? We can easily have a vector of vectors. We want to see something like this if we have nested vectors. And so forth. You could also imagine handling other containers like std::set with different syntax. For example, mathematically, sets are wrapped in curly braces usually. So you could imagine printing out 10, 20, 30 like this. You'd want to handle pairs, print pairs as something like 100, 200. Of course, there's std::tuple to deal with. Although you'd want to write machinery to recursively traverse containers and pairs and things like that, you'd want to leave part of it customizable. For example, just because I like wrapping my vectors in square brackets, maybe a user has a different need to present data, or perhaps they don't want to have spaces after their commas, or they want to customize a completely new container that you've never seen before, perhaps a user-defined container, and yet hook that into the existing pretty printer machinery. So this demands a high level of genericity, and that's what the STL and templates are great at. So let's look at how to do this. They have a project. Here's the website that also explains their approach, which basically says what I've just said. But that has some caveats that I'd like to deal with in my own solution. For example, std::tuple. If you look at how it's specified in the final draft international standard, it's a variadic template. Yet that's not implemented in VC10 SP1. So if you're trying to write code that targets multiple compilers, now you have a headache because VC10 supports tuples up to 10 arguments. 10 is infinity as far as we're concerned. And yet other compilers can handle more. So if you want to write code that can target both, you'll need slightly different forms. Their library does not handle this. They say you'll have to remove all code pertaining to tuples. I'm going to show you how to target both if necessary. And the other parts of their solution that I thought I could solve differently is the handling of arrays, built-in arrays. So if I've got an array declared as something like int a is stuff, maybe it's const, I should be able to print this. Maybe I even have an array of std string. Users generally should be using STL containers because, as we all know, arrays are not the best citizens of the world. They don't know their own lengths. They easily decay into pointers at the drop of a hat. But there's nothing inherently wrong about them. So if we can pretty print them, we may as well try to. In their original solution, they used a pretty print array helper. I'm going to show you how to do it with the same overload as used for STL containers. And my solution differs significantly in how to customize delimiters. They've got something going on with type erasure that I didn't look too closely at. We've seen earlier in this series how to use type erasure. For example, std shared putter and std function use type erasure to remember certain things like how to delete an object or the exact type of a functor while appearing to forget unnecessary details. Std shared putter doesn't mention an allocator or a deleter in its type, yet it has erased that type and through the magic of virtual functions has stashed that away somewhere. So type erasure is extremely important, extremely powerful when you need it, but it carries certain costs. Virtual functions, they typically inhibit inlining unless you do very advanced things like what std function does. you need dynamic memory allocation in order to new up a derived object and store a pointer to base. And if you try to implement the small functor optimization the std function does, that's a lot of work. So if you can avoid that, if you don't need to bring type erasure into it, that is an advantage. And my solution does not use any type erasure. And it's actually more customizable. You can do something especially tricky, similar to what Visual Studio does with its visualizers. I'll show you what I do there. So let's take a look now at my solution. Of course, I got a bunch of includes. I will post this on my SkyDrive in the comments so you can follow the code along and hack on it yourself. So the one part of Carrick SB's original solution that I did take was how to recognize an arbitrary container. I originally tried to write this code from scratch. I had some tricky code that looked at, does this object, does this type have a begin member function, and does it return something that has a std iterator tag of input iterator or better? Unfortunately, my solution, while correct, broke VC's mind like a twig. So I don't like to do that. So I went back and took their simpler solution. This is container helper here. This is a type trait, as we saw back in, I believe it was part 9 or part 10 of the intro series. It's just a template struct, and this is actually a helper. It's going to be wrapped by isContainer below. What this does is it tries to detect whether the type T has a nested type def or maybe a nested class called constiterator. I'm going to say that if you've got a nested type or a nested type def called constiterator, hey, you look like a container. I expect you to provide begin and end, and that I can iterate over your guts. This is true, of course, for all the standard containers. We could, of course, tweak this, and in fact, below I've got specializations. We'll see how to do that. So the trick that's going on here is that I am going to have two overloaded static functions here, static member functions, f, and I'm going to call them isContainerHelper has been specialized on t, isContainerHelper is templated on t. So I'm going to say my nested type, this is going to be either true type or false type, depending on whether I look like a container or not. I'm going to use decal type here, C++ OX feature. This says, give me the type of this function call without actually calling it. So I don't need to define these guys. These are just declarations. And I say, call f, give it the explicit template argument t, and oops, I don't want to drag that. And I'm going to call it with 0. And this will be either a pointer or an int. I don't care what this is. And so this will attempt to, I guess I did modify this, this will attempt to call, but only at compile time, one of these two. So if the type T, because I'm giving it an explicit template argument, has a nested type const iterator here, then this overload, these two Fs are overloaded, will be preferred. Because 0, the literal 0, I could use null putter here, but 0 is fine, is convertible to a pointer. It can also be passed to the ellipsis, but C++'s overload resolution rules say that the ellipsis is the least preferred of anything during overload resolution. It's a last resort match. So I don't actually want to call these. I simply want this last resort behavior. In the case when I do have a nested const iterator type, this overload is selected and it returns true type. However, if the type T does not have a nested type const iterator, then this overload is not viable. I get substitution failure is not an error, because I will put the type, maybe it's int, in here. And it, of course, it doesn't have a nested type const iterator. So this overload is removed from overload resolution, as we've seen before. And only the ellipsis overload is viable. So it wins by default, the two sweetest words in the English language. And we get false type. So this does a compile time check to see, are you a container? Then I've got the public, I don't want to collapse this, type trait isContainer that simply derives from isContainerHelper's type. I do this because I need to mention it in a base class. So if I directly put all these guts here, I couldn't just derive from the type. However, not everything obeys these rules. I mentioned that I want to handle built-in arrays. Built-in arrays do not have a nested type const iterator, yet my machinery below will be able to handle this properly. So I do want to say that built-in arrays are containers. So I'm going to specialize isContainer. Here's a partial specialization for any t and any n. is container of array of length n is going to derive from true type. I'm not even going to look at is container helper. However, I also want to specialize it the other way around. Consider std string. It has iterators, so you can iterate all over all characters. But if I didn't handle this specially, I would end up printing strings in a way that I don't want. They would look like, you know, x, y, z, when I really want it to be printed as x, y, z, just as a monolithic block. So although sometimes you do want to treat strings as containers, here I do not. So I'm also going to specialize is container on any basic string as false type. A word of caution, I am being rather generic here. I'm specializing this for all basic strings, for arbitrary characters, arbitrary character traits, and arbitrary allocators. I'll continue this elsewhere. I'll always template myself on allocator. But this is not 100% fully baked production code. In particular, I'm making no attempt to handle wide O streams. I'm only using narrow characters to print everything because it's just an example. So if you're expecting to see me template my basic O streams on characters, I'm not doing that here. So this is container, relatively self-contained. Now let's look at the rest of my machinery. Now, I was mentioning about tuples, how to handle the differences between compilers. So here's a check. I'm going to use macros. Macros are often evil, but when you want to handle things at compile time using the blunt method of text substitution, they can be valuable. And in this case, I actually do want what macros provide. So what I'm doing is I'm going to check, is MSC ver defined? This is the VC version macro. If it's defined, we're looking at VC. And I'm going to do an exact check. If our major version is 1600, this maps to VC10 or Visual Studio 2010, then we've got these fake variadic templates where we'll stamp out tuples of up to 10 arguments. In fact, a tuple always has 10 arguments, but the rest of them are defaulted to an internal nil class. So if I want to template on a tuple, I need 10 parameters. So that's what these tuple params are doing. And later on, I'm going to need to refer to tuple of T0, T1, T2. So that's what tuple args are for. Otherwise, if I'm looking at GCC, a compiler that implements variadic templates, my tuple params will be type name dot 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 types, and tuple args will be tuple bracket types dot dot dot. I have an exact version check here for VC10. Because I know for a fact that this will change in VC11. When I can show you VC11, I'll show you what we've done there. Technically, this would also work for VC9 SP1. When we first implemented tuple, we also had the same 0 to 10. But as far as I've as far as I'm concerned, Visual Studio 2008 is dead to me. Everyone should upgrade. So that's why I have an exact version check for 1600 here. Seriously, 2008 has tons of bugs compared to 2010. Please upgrade. So now let's look at the formatter machinery that I was mentioning. I tried to wrap this, but a bit of it is getting cut off to the side here. Can I zoom out a bit? And not conveniently. So there's many ways to handle this. As I mentioned, type erasure is one of them. When I first was hacking my solution, what I originally imitated was std allocator. Allocators are a relatively advanced part of the STL, and they're templated on T. So if I have... And actually, many people have been wanting me to talk about allocators. I haven't yet made a whole episode about them, but I can tell you about the rebinding machinery. Imagine std list. So if I say list of, I don't care what the type is, int, and then I have a myalloc int, like this, okay, L. So myalloc is templated on int. All it knows is to allocate ints, which are 4 bytes. However, consider what stdlist needs to do. It's not actually allocating ints. And this is not something weird that allocators are doing. Allocators do have a reputation for weirdness, but this is fundamental. What list actually stores is you've got your int here, but of course it's got two pointers because it's a doubly linked list, pointer to next and pointer to prev. This whole node needs to be allocated. So what stdlist really wants is myalloc of this internal node type. I'm just going to call it underscore node, ugly name, because that's what we actually use. And this thing is larger than 4 bytes. It's actually 12 bytes on x86. So we can't use myalloc int directly. Instead, std allocators have this tricky rebinding machinery. There was no such thing as template typedefs in C++ 03. Now we've got template aliases in C++ OX. But back in C++ 03, if you want a myAlloc for an internal node type, internally the STL is going to need to say, take this allocator that's been given to me, so myAlloc int, okay, and it's going to need to say rebind. This is a nested struct for my internal node type. And then this nested struct will have a type def called other. And this looks like internally in myAlloc, so you've got a template, I'm just going to abbreviate here, type name T, and then you've got class myAlloc. Internally, you need a template on type name U, struct rebind. That internally provides a type def u as other. So what this little trick does, baked into the standard, says that if you have a myAlloc for any type, by looking at its rebind struct, you can get a myAlloc for any other type, including an internal to the STL implementation type that the author of myAlloc can't directly name. So that's how rebinding works. And then, of course, you need constructors to actually construct an object of that type. And that is somewhat similar to what we're trying to do with this pretty printer, because you could imagine providing a default formatter for, say, a vector that could be rebound to also take a set and emit curly braces for it. I went down that road a little. As soon as I started noticing that I had to provide a rebind, I was like, this is too much machinery. Because ideally, when a user wants to customize the behavior of an algorithm, you want to make it as easy as possible. Consider how the STL works, not with allocators, which are very heavyweight, but with comparators. Comparators are extremely lightweight. All you need to do is provide a struct that takes two objects by const reference and returns whether one is less than the other in some way that obeys the STL's conventions. So minimally, all you need is a struct with a single member function that knows how to compare two objects. That's very easy to provide. And with lambdas, it's even easier. Here, we are providing something a little more heavyweight because we need to talk about three different types of delimiters and printing out elements. But we still want to make it relatively easy for the user. We don't want to involve type erasure. If we can avoid it, we don't want to have anything like rebinding. So I switched to the solution of having a non-template. So here's my default formatter struct that provides the basics of emitting delimiters. What it has, and this is sort of the core functionality, let me scroll to the right here, is three templated member functions. So these member functions can accept arbitrary types. And they say that if you've got some container, I don't know what it is, this will handle std::list, std::map, whatever you have. Prefix will be what to print out before the container is ever emitted. And for arbitrary containers, we want to emit a square bracket. Separator is used to print the separators between elements. And that's going to be comma space, and suffix will close off the container. So I am taking OStreamRef so I can stream things into it. My original solution had me returning a const char star or a std string, but I found, you'll see below with my special formatter, that taking OStream and being able to stream stuff into it is more general and more convenient. And it also takes this templated const href. This allows it to detect the type. Now for these functions, I don't actually care what the object is because no matter what the vector contains or a map contains, I'm always going to begin it with a square bracket, separates elements by commas. I don't need to inspect it at all. So I've just I've left this parameter unnamed to avoid an unnamed parameter or unused parameter warning. So then I can go customize, IntelliSensing me, I can go customize the behavior of prefix, separator, and suffix for other types that I want to do different things. So I can recognize pairs. And for pairs, I don't want them in square brackets. I want parentheses. So I can customize the paren on prefix, the separator, comma, and the paren on suffix. Now, it's not actually necessary for me to customize the separator because the generic separator, this primary template here, also prints comma space. So I could actually just remove this overload entirely. I've put it there just so you can see all three being provided at once. But it would be okay for me to delete the separator and only customize the two parentheses. And then I also want to handle tuples. So here I'm going to use those macros. Remember that this is either tuple params is type name T0, type name T1, dot, 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 and so forth. Or it's literally type name dot, dot, dot types when variadic templates are present. So here I say template on tuple params, my macro. And this prefix will recognize tuple of tuple args. Here, IntelliSense is showing me that for VC, it's defined as T0, T1, and so forth. And then I also want to print out parenthesis, comma, parenthesis for tuples. And again, I don't actually need the separator here. I want to handle sets specially. As I mentioned, I want braces for their mathematical style notation. So I'm going to template myself to be generic on arbitrary keys, arbitrary comparators, because I don't know if they're coming to me with a set of int greater int, and arbitrary allocators just in case. I will take a set by const reference. Again, I don't care what the set contains, and I'll print out my braces for that. Finally, this default formatter, originally I'd called it default delimiters, but then I realized I also want to be able to customize the presentation of elements, so it became default formatter, knows how to print out elements. For 99% of elements, I just want to stream it out to the O string. This will handle ints, chars, user customized types that have O stream op left shift overloaded. For arbitrary elements, I'm just going to stream them out to OS. But for strings, I want to do something special. What if a string is empty? What if a string contains leading or trailing spaces? I want to be able to see, I've actually got a string here that's empty. So I want to wrap my strings in actual double quotes. So I'm going to recognize arbitrary basic strings and wrap them in double quotes. I could further customize this. For example, what if my string has embedded new lines? Maybe I don't want to literally emit a new line. Maybe I want to escape it and show it as backslash n because that's what it would appear like in a source file. Or for non-printing characters, show them as a hex escape. I could do that here too. I would simply need to run over my string and process it in a form suitable for display. The other thing that I'm not doing here is I'm not overloading op left shift myself. You could imagine a whole scheme where we're just overloading the operator, but you'll notice here I'm doing more work. I'm recognizing arbitrary containers, pairs, and tuples, and I have these three different member functions, prefix, separator, and suffix, in addition to element. So this is a lot more work than IOStream's machinery of simply saying overload op left shift and stream something out. The other thing that I'm doing is that this is object-oriented. I hate to use that term because there is actually no inheritance or anything here. But it's object-oriented in the literal sense of I've got this object, default formatter, doing work for me. And this is, aside from the fact that I've got more than one member function, the exact same scheme that the STL uses with comparators. It says, give me a comparator object, and I don't care what it contains. It could store state. It could be stateless. All that I care is that I can invoke this member function, operator paren paren on it, and compare to objects. So that allows you to write stateful comparators or stateful predicates that remember something at runtime passed in by the user. This default formatter happens to be stateless. And my special formatter will also be stateless, but there's absolutely nothing stopping a user from saying, okay, I'm going to load up my special formatter or some other custom formatter at runtime with strings, and maybe I'm going to switch them at runtime, and then print out these stored strings. So the interface, this template interface of default formatter is only the fact that I need to be able to call prefix, separator, suffix, and element with an O stream and an element. The formatter gets to decide how to return stuff, and it can do that using state if it wishes. So it's very generic, very customizable. It's a lot of work sometimes building in all this customization, handling arbitrary containers, handling stateful comparators or stateful functors like here. But it pays off later on when either you yourself are using your own code or some user comes to you and says, hey, I want to use your code in this totally novel way. Can I stick a stateful functor in there? Generalizing without going too far overboard can be very valuable. So now let's see how I use this default formatter or formatter in general to print things. So I'm going to do something here. I'm going to declare all of the template functions I'm going to use before actually defining them. Up above, I haven't had to do that. For example, here I declare my primary template for isContainerHelper, and then I wrap that in isContainer. But when it comes to printing out these things, I'm going to want these functions to call each other. If I've got an overload of print for pairs on pairs of AB, what if A itself is a vector or A is a tuple? What if I have a pair of tuples, of pairs of tuples? There's nothing stopping some crazy user from having such a construct. And I want my overloads to be able to handle that cleanly. So by declaring everything that I could possibly use up front and then defining them, I ensure that I'm not going to run into situations where I'm trying to call something that hasn't been defined yet. I don't even want to look up in the standard what the language is supposed to do in that case. It's much simpler to just declare everything up front. So I can show you their signatures here. This is the simplest form of print that takes an O string to string stuff into. In my actual test code, it's always going to be C out. But this is generic enough to be able to handle other O strings. One obvious case is string stream. What if you want to print stuff to a string stream, not actually to the console, but in memory, and then go to that string stream and grab a std string from it so that you can go send it over the network or whatever. Taking OStreamRef allows me to do that. And if I went and widened it, templated it on character type, I could handle wide streams as well. As I mentioned, I'm not doing that here. So this is the convenience form that will use default delimiters. But I also want a customizable form. Here's the overload that takes OString T and a formatter. I don't know what that formatter is, but I'm going to use it to display everything else. And then I'm also going to provide overloads for pairs and tuples. Here's that tuple params macro again that we recognize. And this will specially detect pairs and tuples. The machinery to detect arrays and strings we've already seen, so I don't need to handle them here. Now, I do need a chain of helper functions in order to unwrap tuples and print them element by element at compile time. So that's what these print tuple helpers are doing. In order to save my sanity and your sanity while you read the code, I've given them a distinct name. There is nothing technically stopping me from overloading them and just calling them all print. But then it can be very confusing. Okay, did I mean this internal tuple tuple helper print, or did I mean the user-facing print? There's no reason not to give it a special name, so I've called it print tuple helper here. We'll see how these work. And then also I need a couple helpers to distinguish, am I looking at a container, which I need to recurse into, or am I looking at an element where I need to call the element member function of my formatter? So let's see the definitions of these. Here is the simplest user-facing print. I take an O stream and a T, and I'm simply going to call the other print that takes a custom formatter, and I'm going to make an object of type default formatter. Remember that this is stateless. It doesn't even have a constructor, much less any data members, so this will all compile out. The optimizer can easily see that the thing is stateless, and it will literally just emit OStream left shift square bracket rather than paying any cost. So it's very convenient and nice in terms of efficiency. So the print that takes an arbitrary formatter, this is the general form of print. Oh, and as an aside, there is a C++ OX feature that would allow us to avoid providing this separate convenience print and this general print. That would be default template arguments on function templates. If you've got a class template, and vector is the simplest example here, you've got template on type name T, and also type name allocator. This is got a default template argument of std allocator of T, class vector, and then delicious guts. But if you're a user and you don't care what the allocator is, all you need to do is say vector of T, and it gets that wonderful default template argument. So you'll only ever see this argument here if you're looking at like the debugger, which knows the true types of things, or if you want to provide your own custom one. In C++ 9803, due to really an oversight, function templates did not benefit from this. You could not, if you've got a template function, say type name x equals and then some template default argument for the template. That restriction has been removed in C++OX, but because it's not implemented in 2010, I'm not using it here. It's not too much work to provide a separate helper here, but eventually we will be able to unify these and say template type name T, type name format equals default formatter, and then also provide a default function argument that just says format paren paren. So if the user doesn't want to, they don't have to provide the third argument at all. So that's why I've got two overloads. Here, we've got this print container helper. So this arbitrary T, it needs to decide, is this thing a container or not? So it's going to call print container helper, which, oh, thanks, IntelliSense, has been overloaded to accept an argument of either false type or true type. This is a compile time test, which is nice. It's going to use, not really call, is container of T and construct just a temporary object of that type. So it's either going to be an object of type true type or false type, depending on if it's a container or not. We'll see what that does below. Overloads for pair and tuple. Pair simple. We're going to call the formatter and emit a prefix for the pair, by default parenthesis, and then recursively call this scheme of print overloads for whatever P first is. P might be a vector, it might be a string, it might be an int, it might be another pair. By calling the overload, this will ensure that I do the right thing for it recursively. And then emit a separator, print the second, and then the suffix. So this overload of print encodes the structure of a pair. Prefix, first element, separator, second element, suffix. Whereas the formatter controls the presentation, what the prefix is, what the separator is, and what the suffix is. So I'm separating responsibilities here. I could try to all cram it into the class, but it's cleaner to do it with the class helping this non-member function. And then same with tuples. Tuples are more special because they work with arbitrary numbers of arguments. Here I've got the convenient macro again, tuple params and tuple args. The arbitrary one for tuple of any size, tuple can be all the way down to zero elements or infinity, infinity being 10 for VC. I'm going to use the tuple size helper struct provided by the STL and get its size. So if I've got a tuple of five types, consize tn will be 5. Then I'm going to print out the prefix for the tuple, call my printTuple helper to print out the n elements, and then print out the suffix. And I need to tell it at compile time how many elements there are, and I'm going to use integral constant here. As an aside, I found a bug in our STL when I was writing this code. If you look at the standard, the final draft international standard, the tuple size struct is actually supposed to derive from std integral constant. So my overloads that take std integral constant, I should be able to pass tuple size of blah, blah, blah directly to it. In fact, our tuple size is a freestanding struct that does not derive from integral constant, so I can't do that. Instead, I need to extract n and then actually create a helper object of integral constant size tn. When we fix our STL, hopefully in VC11 now that I've noticed the bug, we would directly be able to pass tuple size of blah, blah, blah to print tuple helper. So that's why I've lifted it out. But this is actually, it's pretty convenient to read. So what print tuple helper does, for a tuple of size 2 or more, this overload takes its template on size ti and takes integral constant of I. What it does is it gets the size of the tuple, n, and because, in this case, I'm calling it originally with n, this is it's counting down in reverse. So if I've got a tuple of 5 element, or let's say 3 element, okay, 5. Tuple of type A, B, C, D, E, okay. The size n that I originally passed is 5. So in this overload here, this I, the element that I want, is 5, but that's not the right index that we want. We really want this one. So this was the original n, and we've also detected in this that the size of the whole tuple is n. The I that I've been given is 5, but this tuple is 0 based. So this is element 0, element 1, element 2, element 3, element 4. I want index 0. So the expression for that is the size of the whole tuple minus my countdown I. So if I've been given I equals 5, I'll get the 0th element, and then I'm going to count, I count down here, so my next I will be 4, and n minus I will be 1, and I'll get the second element. So that's why I'm reversing here. So I print out n minus I using the get function from the STL. That's the recursive call that will print out whatever that tuple element is. And then I'm going to recurse, after printing out a separator, subtracting one from my countdown. So this overload is for two or more elements in my tuple, which is why I can print the separator with confidence. I know that after printing this element, I've got at least one more. Then I've got an overload for one element remaining. That's what you can think of as I as. I is the number of elements left to print. Initially, it's five for a five tuple, then four elements, three elements, two elements, so forth. If I've got one element left to print, then I want to access the last element, but I don't want to print any separator, and I don't want to recurse, because I'm done. The printing of the suffix is already handled by this wrapper here. So that's what the overload for one is. And just in case, the user might give me an empty tuple, tuple bracket bracket. So I've got an overload here to intercept that, so we don't explode horribly. And just print nothing, because empty tuples are just paren, paren, and we're done. And then finally, print container helper. This is really the core of this whole scheme. If isContainer returns true type, then I want to print out the prefix for the whole container, and then print out the elements separated with separators, but not having a trailing comma or a preceding comma or anything like that. So in order to handle arbitrary containers and arrays, I'm going to use the C++ OX function, non-member begin and end. These are provided by iterator, and they're also overloaded for arrays. So even if my const c ref here is bound to an array, a built-in array of size n, the STL's begin and end will detect that and detect the size of the array. This is how I handle arrays without a print array overload. This will also work for STL containers or anything that has a begin and end member function. And then I loop through this loop here. I've carefully written it, I think it's careful, to handle the weakest possible iterators, input iterators. Everything in the STL is at least forward or better, but there's nothing in principle stopping someone from defining a container that generates its elements on the fly and has the weakest class of read-only iterators, input iterators. So here, I've written this loop to basically check, okay, do we have anything to print at all? If we do, loop and print out an element and then increment the iterator. If we've hit the end, then simply break out without printing a final separator. But if we've got more elements, then actually print out a separator. So this avoids storing a third iterator, which is something you can only do with four iterators and so forth. Like I mentioned, being general is sometimes a fair amount of work, but it will pay off eventually. And then finally, if you have something that it's not a container, then you simply want to call the element member function of the formatter to print it out without recursing into it. This will also handle strings because we specialized isContainer helper to say std::string and std::wString are actually not containers, even though they've got that const iterator, so element will be called for them. I've got helper functions here that will print a container on a single line. The print and its helpers that recurse obviously can't emit new lines, otherwise a container of containers would get new lines in it. But if I just want to print a top-level container on a single line, I can call println here. Again, because I don't have default template arguments on function templates, I need to provide one that calls the toArg form and one that takes the formatter as well. And then, just for purposes of demonstration, I've got a special formatter here that shows you how to customize the presentation of things. So I need to start off by delegating to the default formatter if I don't care to provide a special case. So I'm going to just accept arbitrary T for prefix, separator, suffix, and element, and construct a default formatter on the fly and call its function to do the work. It's stateless, so this will all compile out. But then I can provide my own overloads that will intercept classes that I care about and do something different. So here, I want to imitate STL visualizers that emit the size of a container before their elements. This is where the fact that my prefix, separator, suffix, and element actually take an object of the type comes in handy, because I can look at the set being printed and print out its size in square brackets before the curly brace that begins the set proper. This would not be possible if I were only returning a const::char star or if I weren't able to inspect the set if I was only being told its type. I can also, in addition to customizing things that the default formatter already knows how to, because remember I had a case for brace for set, I can also teach it entirely new types. Here I'm going to tell it forward list to do something silly, where I've got angle brackets to begin and end the thing, and because forward list has node links, I'm going to print out a little arrow between the elements just to prove that I can. I could handle any other things that I want here. And also, I can customize the display of individual elements. I could add something for long to print it in hexadecimal form or whatever, or I could customize strings to not print the double quotes around them. So here I've done that, and this for std strings will be chosen instead of going to the base class for element. Or sorry, not a base class. At one point I was deriving from default formatter, but I'm not here. So usage is actually anticlimactic. I have exhaustive test cases. It's always a good idea to test all of the possible cases you can imagine, empty vectors, empty tuples, one element vectors, and so forth. Let me show you the more interesting cases where I've got a vector of strings, and I can simply say print line, C out V, and it will recurse into the strings. Or I can say a vector of int. I can print out a map. Remember that maps elements are actually pairs of const key and value. I can print out multi-dimensional arrays. Absolutely nothing in my code cared about the single dimensionalness of arrays, so this will work automatically, which is nice. A vector of tuple of int string int. And then I can also use that special formatter. Here I've got some completely random strings in a vector set string, and I'll print that out. And I can also test my forward list. So let's see what this looks like when I execute it. I've got my breakpoint there. Compile and run. And build succeeded, and here we go. And I fit my breakpoint. So let me show you the special formatter, because that's sort of the most impressive, I think. Here is my program. And you can see the special formatter, this is a vector of set of string. So the vector itself is printed by the default formatter with square brackets. So that's what the outer square brackets are. The individual sets are handled by the, well, everything's going through the special formatter, but for vector, the special formatter says, oh, just call default formatter. For sets, special formatter says, ooh, I know how to recognize that. I want to print out the size. So my first set is of size 4. It prints out a 4, and then it recurses and prints out the strings, because it's a set of strings. And I have special case strings as well to not print out double quotes. So here you see no double quotes, and same for the other sets. I also tested set of pair of intent to prove that special formatter can customize the display of a set. Here you see the size 3 being printed, but then when it recurses, it will hit the default formatter for the presentation of the pairs, which I didn't customize in any way. And then you can see my silly thing for forward list where I printed out angle brackets and then arrows. Up above, you can see that I've handled multidimensional arrays correctly, vector of tuples correctly, and all of my simple cases for exhaustive correctness, the empty vectors, empty sets, one element vector, one element set, all of these work. And you can see that the loop that I had that handled the printing of the separator does not print any spurious commas for one element vector, set, array, or tuple. I'm not testing empty arrays because there's no such thing as zero length arrays. And that's it. So this code will be available. I will put on my SkyDrive and post it in the comments. If you have any ideas for future parts, suggest them, and we'll see if I can get to them. Until next time, see you then.